This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
One goal at a time. Brought to you by UOB.
Good morning all, and welcome to our first episode of One Goal at a Time. If you didn't already know, the UN aims to help transform our world using the 17 goals in their 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. And here on BFM, we want to highlight some local companies that have adopted some of these goals in their day-to-day operations. And on today's show, we'll be hearing from Gomia Kiat, or MK. He's the CEO of the world's largest condom manufacturer, Carex. And we'll be talking about their dedication to reducing their impact on the environment and how Carex are taking climate change seriously. BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Hi, I'm MK Goh from Carex Berhad. I'm the CEO of the company.
Now, MK, you guys are the number one condom manufacturer in the world. And obviously with that, there must be this large sense of responsibility when it comes to sustainability practices. How do you think Carex are dedicated to reducing your impact on the natural environment and taking action on climate change? I know it's an easy topic to start with, but let's see where it takes us.
Well, it's definitely a big responsibility for us. I take sustainability very seriously across the whole organization. In fact, for us, in terms of sustainability, we just don't look into the environment. We look a lot into the economic sector, the social sector, as well as the environmental sector as well. And of course, for us as a factory, where we make one in almost five condoms in the world today, we definitely have gone into certifications, into ISO 14001 certification to ensure that we have a tool to measure in terms of where we have gone in terms of the environment, in terms of control, in terms of the environment. But what we also see that's important as well is in terms of energy. Two of our plants has already undergone the ISO 50001 certification in terms of the energy management system, because we also want to measure in terms of the amount of energy we use to reduce the environmental impact, terms of reducing the CO2 impact for our products as well.
I've been reading a little bit about you, obviously, and I know a bit of the history of Carex. And obviously, it started out just as a family business and it's been a fairly rapid expansion for an outlooker anyway. And how have you managed to continue to grow and still limit the amount of environmental impact as the company has grown? Has it been a difficult balancing act at any stage?
Well, definitely it's been difficult, but I think it's most important in terms of ensuring where the core is, in terms of making sure that the company would have to continue to maintain its profitability. And I think, like all businesses, where does it matters most? In a way that, we have taken the environmental issues in terms of our core decision-making as well, in terms of reducing costs, in terms of making sure that we are continuously being competitive in the international market. So what we've done in Carex is the fact that we actually built our own machines, and the fact that when we built our own machines, we have the ability to change some of the technology, some of the heating, in terms of the energy that we consume in the machines. Our engineering department has been fairly successful over the years in terms of developing machines that are very efficient, that would enable us to be competitive globally.
And I want to talk a little bit about your partnerships. And I mean, what partnerships have you formed over the years that help you promote these good practices?
Oh, well, we've definitely worked with a lot of, suppliers, locally and internationally in terms of the designs of the machines. But I think we also look into the area of the material itself. We are today a member of Fair Rubber International. So when we look into the area of sustainability, I think it's also the area of ethical that basically comes into a very important part of our business as well. Beyond that, in terms of value chain, we also work with a lot of the stakeholders. Stakeholders in terms of people like the Malaysian AIDS Foundation. We work with PT Foundation. It's an area that we see very important for us in terms of sustainability, especially in a socioeconomic sector. We want to make sure that, you know, we play our part as corporate citizens in terms of giving back to the community. So that's one thing that we have always been challenging. The fact that, you know, we have been in the condom space, we understand, and I grew up a lot understanding HIV/AIDS as well, as it's a business that we do. So we put a lot of emphasis towards a lot of the CSR programs into HIV/AIDS promotion, into understanding, you know, sex education and its importance in our community as well.
I know you've been heavily involved with the arts industry as well in the past, right?
Yes. We run it in a way that we want to put a purpose into the things that we do, especially with CSR. And what I've done is that we created a program called Arts Against AIDS. We've run it for over 7 years now. And what we do here is that we know that sex is a very difficult topic to talk in schools. But, you know, one thing that I believe that, you know, arts is one that sort of, you know, transcends across cultures and boundaries where, you know, we can't go with, you know, a typical CSR program in terms of asking people just to go to school and ask them to use condoms. So we use a lot of arts in terms of trying to communicate with, you know, the youth today. And I think it's been fairly successful. People do understand that, right? It just doesn't have to be words sometimes, but arts do to a certain extent, you know, bring our message across.
And do you think it's been easier to get that message across over the years?
I think it has been, definitely. But, you know, it's difficult, obviously, to start with, and sometimes in a community that could be quite conservative. But it has definitely gone easier, you know, because it's easy that today, and I think everyone understands the importance of having prevention, because, you know, we ourselves today is living through a pandemic, and, you know, HIV/AIDS was equally as bad in the 80s. You know, people were dying, and, you know, we've not solved that problem yet. And I think there's still a lot of work that we have to do in terms of trying to solve the HIV/AIDS problem as well.
Let's rewind a little bit. And we were just before that kind of little tangent, we were talking about the factory and the machines that you've created to make them more environmentally friendly, I guess, a term I'd like to use. For you, how important is it to your overall company culture that your employees are environmentally aware?
I think it's very important across all levels within the organization. That's where, you know, one of the projects that I did last 2 years actually was creating a space which we call it the Container Cafe. So we had a space within our factory. It's a very small space. And I challenged the fact that we put 10 containers in this space. And we built a cafe, we built a sort of a breakout area for people within the organization. And we didn't want to use anything that was new. And the whole idea was to get it from recycled materials. And we came out with, you know, used containers. So we built the whole space out of, you know, used containers. But the whole idea was all about being creative, because we believe that, you know, being sustainable, you know, it's that part of that creative culture that you have to have within an organization. And it was true that I think that really, you know, opened up a lot of people's mind, that the fact that we could be sustainable and still be cool, and also still have a, you know, a great space for people to actually chill out.
That was something I wanted to talk to you about. And I suppose it almost feels like an odd question when I'm speaking to, you know, the world's largest condom manufacturer about reusing and recycling. How much of your operation would you say are taking advantage of reusing and recycling, other than this breakout space that you've created?
Yeah.
How does that work? How does that work within the condom industry?
Well, there's definitely limitations that we have within the condom industry because, you know, we are a condom, we are a consumer product, but, you know, we are also a medical device. Sometimes would be my biggest frustration, the fact that, you know, when I want to change something, I can't get it changed as fast as I want it to be. Because, you know, being in a medical device product, you have to go through multiple levels of validation and registration. So there's very limited that you can do. And the fact that actually, it's one thing that if you look into a condom, the two things that's probably most not green, it's the aluminium foil and it's the lubricant. It's the silicone oil, right? And to get silicone oil, it's basically to get sand and basically use lots of energy and basically turn it into oil. Mm-hmm. And the aluminium foil is something that's not as green as well. So I have worked with multiple agencies as well, in the WHO specifications over the years, in terms of trying to make sense. And I'm actually pretty glad that, you know, I'm not writing this myself. The WHO and the United Nations people are very aware of such situations, and they are very open, I would say, over the last few years in terms of even going to that level of changing specifications to make sure that the products are greener. So that's one thing that, you know, we have actually been very much involved. But one of the programs that, you know, we've been involved as a company, it's really recycling scraps, because, as any factory, you would have scraps. So one of the programs that we have done last year, we created this whole rubber recycling scrap in terms of trying to get it to, for other industries to use it as a raw material.
Right.
So one of the things is that, you know, we're glad that, you know, over just last year, we had almost 342 metric tons of scrap condoms that, you know, that didn't pass our standards, were actually scrapped, and they were actually made into high grade materials that could be reused in other factories.
But that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's also a collaboration that we're still looking, because we want to continue to look at making that product even better, that we could even make higher grade products. So collaborations with universities, our R&D programs are not looking just into developing new products, but as well as into looking into materials, scraps that we could reuse them in for other people.
How do you actively monitor then your sustainable performances? Do you have goals that you set in place, like, you know, monthly, quarterly, yearly goals? And how do you go about monitoring those?
Well, we monitor them internally. So we've got the whole operations team. We've got a whole dashboard in terms of our operation dashboard. So we look into it in terms of the whole, as I've mentioned earlier, you know, we take sustainability very important, and we put sustainability within the operation dashboard itself. Mm-hmm. So that's something that is actually being reviewed, on even daily basis at certain levels. But at the top level within the organization, it's being reviewed on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. But what we have actually done as well is, you know, we've gone into certifications beyond the two certifications, as I've mentioned, the ISO 14001 and ISO 50001. What we've gone into as well is that we've also looked into SMETA certifications. So SMETA is a certification that's a more holistic certification that not only looks into the environmental assessment, but it also looks into labor standards, health and safety, management systems, and business ethics, which is definitely a broader perspective of how we're going to look into sustainable approach for Carex. Yeah, so there's definitely one that we look into as an organization. We have not yet looked into moving into goals, because currently what we're trying to understand is that we're collecting data over the last few years. And definitely one approach that we want to start in the next few years is definitely to start putting in, targets. We've done little programs over the last few years, like, you know, as simple as just banning, you know, plastic cups, water. So we don't use any more. People who come to our office, you know, would not be served with anything that is, you know, bottled water.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So all those little programs has already started to continue. But I think one of the things that has probably derailed some of that programs is definitely COVID.
For sure.
With all the social distancing and looking into the amount of disposable items that we are using today, is definitely something that, you know, we're looking into how do we get back into that that mode that we had before COVID.
I've got one final question for you, MK, before I let you go. And if you could change anything about the way that your company operates, to make it more sustainable, to make it more environmentally friendly, I mean, it can be something small, or it can be something, you know, really, really big. What do you think it would be, the one thing that you might change?
I would definitely want to change the product itself.
Wow. That's a bold step.
Yes. Natural rubber condom has been around for long enough. It has been around, I believe that, you know, the impact would be big as the largest condom maker in the world. You know, I believe that the product has to be fully sustainable, and I don't think we're there yet. And I'm looking into all areas in terms of research and development into making a product that's just not, you know, sustainable, but I think it has to be enjoyable and pleasurable for the users as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I want to, I've set my foot there. We've put all our internal objective into redeveloping product. And, you know, I'm pretty happy that we're close, and at least, you know, we know where we're heading towards.
I'd like to thank MK from Carex for taking part in this show. And if you missed any of this episode of One Goal at a Time, download the podcast wherever you normally listen to it from, or download the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. Make sure you tune in next Friday at 10:30 a.m. for another episode of One Goal at a Time. I'm Rich Bradbury for BFM 89.9.
One Goal at a Time was brought to you by UOB, building sustainable smart cities.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.